found this on Ganarum. Ganamir Ni.
What is it?
Well, it's
Sick the Hornets.
Welcome to Sit the Holics, guys. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is Aaron O'Brien.
Hey.
And we have two special guests today, Larry Nemechek and Bonnie Moss. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hello. Nice for you to have us back.
Very nice
to
have you.
Yes, we're a team, you know. We're right out of vaudeville, and we're Nemechek and Moss, and it's a
And this big hook is about to come out, Larry.
Uh-oh. Well, we're here. I wanted them to come on because Larry Nemechek did the Geek Nation tour, and Bonnie Moss participated in the Geek Nation tour, which ultimately culminated in Star Trek Las Vegas. And I wanted to hear about that from both Larry and Bonnie. But first, Larry Nemechek's got some kind of updates of this Portal 47 and Con of Wrath, which both Larry and Bonnie are working on.
Yes.
Oh, so bang, cold. Yeah. Well, so if you haven't heard it by now, after 5 years or whatever it's been of working, The Con of Wrath is my documentary that was easygoing the first few years we worked on it. It's the true life story of what I call Star Trek's most glorious failure, but it was the first time anybody tried to do, after about 10 years of Trek conventions, of media conventions, tried to do kind of an out-of-the-box rock show, you know, arena-type big event. And it was in Houston, Texas, 2 weeks after the Wrath of Khan opened in June of 1982. And as we say, to cut it short and make it a, you know, short story, it did not quite go as it was intended to go. It did not quite go as planned, especially with some surprises that greeted people on Friday. But it had all the original cast from the Wrath of Khan, except for Nimoy, which was Leonard, which was a story in itself. Mm-hmm. But all the hoo-ha recently about Star Trek Las Vegas and about that being Kirstie Alley's first convention, that was not her first convention appearance. She actually made at least two other ones, and this was in Houston in June 82 was her other one.
They don't talk about it.
it's in the Soviet encyclopedia. It did not happen. So it's a real hoot of a show. There's a conofrath.com webpage. And has a very we're about to get that rebuilt finally and put a newer trailer on it. And there's a Con of Wrath Facebook page and people not a Kickstarter, but obviously it's after 5 years. But there's some PayPal donation links and perks if people want to do that. And the bottom line is the last year and then into this year we're wrapping it up. This year got a little crowded, and then when Adam Nimoy had his great documentary about his dad, and some other great pieces have come out with the 50th. It was just getting a little crowded and kind of silly, so it gave us a little more time to get some more people in. But, you know, George and Nichelle and Walter and the late, great Harv Bennett and Wendy Doohan and Kerry O'Quinn, who was the editor of Starlog, who was the MC for the talk show portion of the show. They're all in it, as well as the organizers and dealers and people who were there at the time, one of which is Mike here tonight.
Yes.
A contributor, a survivor, and a contributor, and in fact, an associate producer for the, because she cared enough to jump in and help make this go. So, which is actually how I met Bonnie.
It's true. And that was in Las Vegas, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. Talk about links there. It was in 2011, I guess.
No, it was 1982, Bonnie.
No. It just seems like yesterday, Larry. And we were so much younger then. I mean, do the math with 82, folks. You know, we were mere children at the time of this convention. But for folks who are interested in convention lore and for a convention that has – for which the likes has never been seen again, thank goodness, This would be a fascinating film. It will talk about Larry's going to have some secrets that will be even new to me as an attendee. But it also is a state of the fandom at that time, and you know, 82 is a real hopeful, exciting time because the real good movie had just come out. You know, that was really going to save the franchise, and I'm sure Larry has an opinion on that. But it was a really interesting time in fandom, and certainly an interesting time for a different type of convention that later became more standard, if you will, in terms of wanting multiple guests, that type of thing. That was very atypical, if not unheard of, before then. If you went to a convention with maybe one or two you know, of the stars, that was incredible. To hear the whole cast, you know, maybe ho-hum now, but back then that was exciting. It was terrific.
Well, and as we say, there was no bloody A, B, C, or D back then. Mm-hmm. It was just the one cast. And, mm-hmm. and no, you know.
And the Reliant.
But it wasn't just another box of, you know, DVDs on the shelf. It was Star Trek, and Star Trek finally came back, and then it was, okay, this glorious comeback, but it still maybe wasn't quite all we could expect. And then the phrase associated with Wrath of Khan was, you know, that's more like it. But, yeah, it's as much as of Star Trek's history as fandom's history. And one of the things that's interesting to do as we get into this, I keep asking, could something like this happen again? And there have been meltdown and blow-up conventions happen in the, you know, more modern era over the years, and I've been at one or two, actually. But it was just a, you know, a kindler time, a simpler time. Mm. And it was, you know, pre-internet, pre-cell phones even. So one of the things we get into, aside from just the crazy chronology and the stories of the story, are, could this happen again? What's different about fandom now versus then? And then what's exactly the same? And, you know, snarky people is... I know you're shocked. Guys are shocked, but there were, you know, snarky and backbiting and arguing fans were just part of fandom then as it is now. And what? By the end of the weekend, I know.
I thought that was an early aughts thing.
Now, Larry, your crowd may have been like that, but I was with wonderful, soft, considerate, after you kind of folks. But
you're, yeah, right. You soft, good southerners.
That's right.
But no, by the end of the weekend, people were – so the actual name of the arena show, which was attached to the Houston Con convention, was – it was called The Ultimate Fantasy, which, you know, today sounds like 80s porn. But by the end of the weekend, people were calling it The Ultimate Fallacy, The Ultimate
to add to the porn reference.
The Ultimate Fuck Up, The Ultimate – and then somebody came up and said, no, guys, we just survived the Con of Wrath. And that caught on so much on Sunday that some of the dealers that had button makers were actually making buttons that said, I survived the Con of Wrath by that weekend. So the title is not mine. It was but it screamed to be named the Con of Wrath. And I've actually got a couple of – one of them courtesy of Bonnie. I've actually had a couple of different versions of I survived the Con of Wrath buttons from back in the day that have been – and they're on film. So anyway, so that's – yeah,
I can't wait for this. I actually listened to the Trek Geeks podcast, which you guested on, Larry, I think in December, and you know, you had mentioned that people could help transcribe it, and I offered to do that, and I did one of the interviews. Are you still needing people to work on that? Or
yes, I'm so glad you. I don't ever remember to say that, but thank you. Hey, thank you for doing
it. Right into your hands, Larry.
Yeah, that was a nice soft punt right to me.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, no, thank you, David, for doing that. And yes, we're probably going to have about 6, 7, 8 more, and I could very much use it. Sometimes people get into it. It's just typing. You know, you get a little low res video, and it's just typing what they say, what I say, but more importantly, what they say on camera. It's just, you know, just a sit down of one person on camera, very simple that way. And then if they smile, or if there's a blooper, or, you know, if they make a gesture, we note that. Otherwise, it's just typing what they say. And they're anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour and a half. And most of the time, they're enjoyable, and people have seemed to get a kick out of it. I've had a lot of people that have done one. I've had one girl who's done about 8. She's just a wonderful glutton. So, you know, everybody will get screen credit. It's just a volunteer thing to help out. because this is a micro budget, as they say, until we get to the very end, and then we can spend money on what we, you know, what will really be a bang for the buck on screen. But thank you for mentioning that. Yes, we'll.
Yeah, it was a blast.
Check or come on the Facebook page and say, "Hey, Larry, I'll help you transcribe."
Yeah, get a hold of him. I mean, it was a blast to get to see like kind of behind the scenes of this. Of this film, and I'm so excited for it. And I think I did my transcribing around like February or March, and it was really, really interesting stuff. So I can't wait to see how it's all going to come together.
Have you made your contribution, David? Have you made your contribution, a financial contribution yet?
Oh, I have not done that yet. No.
Oh, okay. All right, Larry.
I did spend a lot of time transcribing that.
Okay. No. Yeah, it takes all kinds, so yeah. There's a value. Wait, that didn't sound right.
It is. No, that's true.
There's a definite value added for people that transcribe, and that's why there's screen credit.
Exactly.
And all that. But no, when I do a live show at the conventions where I am, I do a live show that's come to me now to be called the Dr. Trek Show for 2 hours, usually at night, and people put in their $20 for a screen credit, and we do a live show, and we have prize trivia and clips from the doc, and I have some rare video from just Star Trek in general that people can't see and have very rarely seen. So
that's awesome.
That's a lot of fun. If I'm ever in your neck of the woods at a convention, and for the next year or so, I've been doing that for 3 or 4 years, and that part will probably wind down here in the next year. But I'm still doing it. The cons coming up will still be offering that.
Yeah, I hope I can make it out to Albany. In November, that would be great. I just found out about it, so I got to like figure out plans and time off of work. But I would love to,
get working on that. Yeah, yeah. Northeast Trek over the Veterans Day weekend.
Nice, nice. And you said you've got some other stuff going on with a Portal 47, like an anniversary coming up.
Well, this is actually – I can't believe it's been an incredible year. But, you know, for years I was working on how to take all my stuff, my, you know, memories and my archives and the people I knew from Star Trek that were dribbling out to people. People are used to seeing interviews or hearing interviews or watching podcasts or listening to podcasts or seeing convention appearances. And there's so much more – to Star Trek that's out there, and the years are passing, and I just wanted to do something with that. And I knew I had kind of a unique, for a lot of Star Trek, not 1964, but for a lot of more recent Star Trek, I had kind of a unique perch. And so Portal 47 is what I've been very excited to launch just about a year ago. I call it a deep dive every month for old fans, for new fans, for bored fans, for fans who have no idea how much about Star Trek they still don't know. And we basically, it's an insider's backstage pass to more in-depth Trek. And we call it a mini con every month, no matter where your center seat is. Somebody the other day said I should say that it's a bridge to the bridge. But we do it online, a chunk of it, and there's some live components when I'm at a convention near people or if people come to L.A. And it's basically 8 parts every month, is 8 features, the highlight of which is what I call telebriefings. But 1 hour a month is just a session with me. People can ask me what I think or they have a topic or we talk about news headlines or the archive access pieces that I let out. If people want to talk about those, we do. And then the other telebriefing each month is a guest. And it's always somebody that you don't see. If you've seen them at a convention, maybe barely, or you've seen maybe one interview with people in 30 years. And a lot of times you haven't seen anything with people, with some of the guests we've got, because they're all great. They all have their own insights. I'm talking assistants and crew people and stand-ins and stunt people and designers and assistant designers. I'm about to roll out a deluxe level of the portal that we call Deck One in a few months. But it's been awesome. We've been growing every month. I kept trying to figure out a nickname for the members, and it's a good group. We're growing. I'm weakest in the East, which is why I'm glad to come to conventions like Albany. I was glad to come to Shore Leave in July for the first time in about 12 years. Feels crazy. But in the West and in Pacific and Central and we've got people in Europe and some members now in Australia, which is the beauty of the internet. So No, I'm just excited. I feel we're just barely out of the gate. And whether I call them, we were talking about Portales and the 47ers, but we started calling each other deep divers. So, again, because we go where no savvy fan has gone before. So
very nice.
So it's been exciting to do this, and I just love finding, getting these people's voice out to fans who have not had the ability to do that. The woman who was the second and third season costumer on the original series that I had never met until about 3 or 4 months ago, I came across her on Facebook, and she was 22, and she was just a kid on her second job in Hollywood, and that was just fascinating and amazing because, you know, she dressed all the guest star women and the regulars for the last 2 years of the original series.
What a job for your second job in Hollywood. Like, really?
Because, amazing. You knew when you answered this ad, you just knew that 50 years later people would be talking to you about it. You know, it's like everybody else. So that's what the most exciting thing about Portal 47 is for me, is to finally connect the dots for fans who are ready. You know, and it's not for everybody. I mean, when you're a fan, you're excited at first. When you're a new fan, you're thrilled with the shows and the actors. And then eventually you start noticing the writing credits and the directors. And when you're at that point where you want to dig deeper and dive deeper, then Portal 47 is for you. And I'm just excited to come up with and it's a business. It's a business model for me. It's $25 a month. It's 2 movie tickets a month. So hopefully it's a good price point for everybody. It seems to be finding its legs, and I'm getting better at it. It's still evolving. And we're going to have a first anniversary freebie wide open bonus call, just like the launch call that I did a year ago on Wednesday, October 5th. I'm still nailing down the guests, but I want it to be somebody historic. And I'm basically it'll be all over social media and all my entire news list list. Which, if you're hearing this and you're on my news list and you know I haven't sent anything since July, you'll know why if you've survived the crazy 50th summer here. But I'm updating a lot of my things. We just did a new page for Portal 47, and the rest of my website's going to have a fresh new look here within just a couple of weeks. So it's been a very, on top of the 50th, it's been a really busy time for me to here to kind of get my own business house in order, which is why I'm excited. So,
sounds crazy busy.
All the regular things that I've done for ages, some of that landscape is like torn up, and people said, "Hey, you have to go out and be an entrepreneur now." And so it's cool doing things like, just Stellar Tartography was kind of was an official book 2 years ago, the maps and book.
Yeah, Aaron got that for his birthday last year.
Oh, cool.
Yes, I did.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
very nice.
Well, Chase,
I enjoyed it quite a bit. I look at it.
Oh, great. Did you take any of the maps out and frame them?
I haven't framed anything, no. But I do love it. It's a beautiful book. It's amazing that was even put together.
Well, we thought it was going to – there's been kind of a renaissance in cool out-of-the-box. I say when I was a kid. When I was a kid, we had the blueprints and the tech manual and all the cool, behind-the-scenes background books. The behind-the-scenes are making-of books. But I call these gap-filler, in-canon books. Were just cool. And they kind of got away from those. And but we've had a lot of that happening lately. And I have a few more ideas for things, but that was all CBS's instigation with Amazon, kind of the new landscape of things. So anyway, it'd be nice to do some more of those things down the line. But meanwhile, in a year and a half ago, we had no idea about a new series coming back, which is also exciting. So in the meantime, as all this new stuff sorts out, it was time to kind of take, it's nice to have something under your own control and, be the captain of your own ship, so to speak. So that's what's been amazing. But I love it when we do a session and people come on Facebook. We have a private Facebook page and people say, "Oh my God, that was such an incredible story," or "I had no idea," or "Well, that was amazing," or just LOL about something somebody says that they had no idea about. And that's what really makes it for me. It's like, yay, we're getting some of this out of the cellar, out of the basement of people's own, people that never would have been on a stage at a convention or being interviewed somewhere. Or if they were, it was so woefully short that, a fraction of what's there gets out. And it's a fraction of what gets out even in our hour, which usually spreads to an hour and 15 or an hour and 30. And we're just scratching the surface, a lot of folks. So I just invite everybody to come on, go over to the page and jump in if they want to now. If it's still until this October 5th session, anybody that jumps in gets a charter year funding Deep Diver t-shirt. So we did the first ones at Vegas. So the people who are members who were at Vegas got one, and I'm overdue to get everybody else their shirt. So that was just kind of a bonus, a thank you from me for everybody who came in, took a chance with me the first year and wanted to come in. So anyway, I'm going to talk it to death if I don't watch out. But I'm excited to have a business that works like this and at the same time is giving so many people so much enjoyment. And the guests that have been on have had a hoot and thank me for getting some of the stuff out there. They enjoy it too.
Oh, it's always I'm sure great to hear, and it's always great to have you join us here on the show, Larry. So you basically you do the tours for the Geek Nation tour, and Bonnie was a participant on this leading up to Star Trek Las Vegas. Can you two tell us about that?
Bonnie, why don't you tell, because I've been talking. Why don't you, because it's really not my thing. It's a guy named Terrace Cassidy who's a Canadian, and he has a company called Geek Nation Tours, and he came to me to do a Trek film site tour a few years ago. And this was our third iteration. We decided to set it up the week before the Vegas Con, so people came into L.A., because that's where most of the film sites are, and we just barely scratched the surface with that. But we come up with 4, 5, 6 days worth of big and small, famous and not so famous sites, and it has to be something that's tourable. And we had 2 years worth where we were just a small group and barely broke even, and then this year it doubled with the crazy 50th fever, and we added San Francisco. So I'll let Bonnie tell you what it was like for her after that, how she found it.
Well, literally, it was one of the best vacations ever. I think I said on one of the interviews, the best shore leave ever, you know, to have that Trek tour and then have it culminate in the convention, you know, in Las Vegas. And I had heard about the tours, but this was the granddaddy. I mean, that Terrace and Larry, I know you had some input, a lot of input, Larry, on the itinerary and everything.
Oh, well, we planned it together.
Yeah.
I mean, I came up with the raw. Yeah. I mean, it's Terrace's company. He has about 20 or 30 other tours he does for gaming and history and military. And that's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other tours look really great as well. I mean, it is for geeks after all. So you're right. It is a lot about gaming, a lot about if you're a Civil War buff or if you're a military collector of.
Well, they've gone to Japan and done a feudal Japan tour.
Samurai stuff.
Yeah, they did. They went to the 200th anniversary of Waterloo in Europe. You had about 80 people go for that. So they've gone to England and Germany and as well as just the states and around. So
check out Geek Nation Tours, you know, online, and tell Terrace to send Larry and I money for this unsolicited club. So, I don't know how I first heard about it, Larry, in terms of the, you know, this one. Because it was the 50th, as Larry alluded to, it was really beefed up in terms of the number of days and the number of sites. And I think everyone thought, you know, this will never happen in this way again. And I think were there 24 of us that ultimately signed up?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And what really struck me was how many different countries were represented in that 24?
All of them.
We had no one from Malta.
All of the countries, except Malta.
All of the countries were on hand to be represented in the group.
Yeah.
We had Australians, we had Brits, we had Scots, we had an Austrian, mm-hmm. and Canadians. Mm-hmm. I think that was kind of the extent of it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I would say at least half of the group, about half, was probably from overseas, which was great. It just added another dimension to everything. And I don't know whether it was because we're equally passionate about something or whether it was just the right combination of people. But, and Larry, I think you'll agree with this, we all got along. There wasn't any of that fan stuff, you know, in terms of people trying to take center. I mean, everybody was respectful, yet having a ball. I mean, and Larry, you and Terrace had things organized very well, except for that one day in L.A. But it was
Wait, what?
This is now a Geek Nation tour review by Bonnie Moss. So
it's what
write,
you wanted.
Write it on Yelp.
No, I've not recommended it. I mean, it's worth every penny and every day. And I'm still in touch with these people, Larry. I mean, I'm still in touch with Robert and Darryl, both Darryls, you know. I mean, it's been amazing. But the trip, again, we had I didn't take the first leg that started in San Francisco because I'd been to San Francisco, and would you believe, Larry, just last year I had been to Monterey. So had I not been to Monterey, you know, I would have certainly taken that leg too. And Larry can talk about that leg as I was not on it, but it kind of started there and then came to Los Angeles, and I think six of us joined you in L.A. Does that sound
about
right?
That's right, yes. Yeah, and we went from about 18 to 24 then.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. But a fantastic group of people. I think we laughed as much as anything. And it was incredible. Larry did a lot of research in terms of before we went to a particular site, you had the footage of what occurred at that site. So, you know, the bus was great. We could see on the screens what was filmed at the place we were going to get off the bus and see. So
not that most of these guys needed a big reminder, but it was good to be refreshed, you know.
Well, it was a good visual cue. I mean, you know, you may have known it was from this episode and blah, blah, but you can get off the bus and say, oh, yeah, there's that fire hydrant, you know, and there's that cave and there's that, you know, I mean.
It was across the bay in Sausalito, right?
Yeah.
Alameda? Yeah,
yes.
No, it's, I mean, in your mind, you kind of vaguely know, but there's nothing like having it in front of your face and going, oh, my God, oh, my God. And then you can go, and then sometimes, and then people go, well, wait, that door isn't there anymore. And you go, guys, this was 30 years ago. Like, things get changed around since then. So, you know.
Preserve it. It's Star Trek. It needs to be preserved. Don't change anything that was on film.
Bronze that bush. Bronze that tree. Or when we go up to Bronson Canyon and, you know, the canyon of 27 planets in the Bat Cave.
Exactly. And I got a shot of the Bat Cave with a trash can in front of it, which was great. It was nice to know Batman and Robin were, you know, did not litter. You know, when they came out, they stopped at the trash can and then went on. So
it's good to know. I mean,
that was comforting.
He's a responsible Batman.
Exactly. So, yeah.
Of course, Citizen Moss. What do you expect?
Exactly. Okay. It was – every day was filled, and you know, we never got bored, Larry. I mean
– Well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We really – and we were getting to know each other, and it was interesting to get an overseas perspective on Trek. And I think we had a good mix of people who were about the original series, Next Gen, you know. Everybody wasn't – wedded to, you know, it wasn't a vanilla group, you know. I mean,
it was not vanilla. And then we have then the last day, what we've done now for the third year in a row, we have this big tour every 2 years, and every other year we haven't had anything. We just kind of let the demand grow. But last year, rather than let nothing happen, after we started going to the Valley of Fire, which is about an hour on up from Vegas on the other side of LA on toward Salt Lake City on the east side, we go out to Valley of Fire from Generations, where Kirk died. You know, Kirk and Picard.
Bridge
and
on the
Saran.
Captain. I mean, Captain on the Bridge.
Yeah, yeah, Captain on the Killer Bridge. And we've gone out there, and last year we just did that as a day tour. But whether we have the big tour or not, we've offered it as a day tour for people the day before the con starts. So if you're in Vegas anyway, more and more people. It's funny, Vegas STLV hashtag. There's con creep. People are coming more and more for a couple of days ahead and a couple of days after and, you know, longer and longer and enjoying Vegas or not just coming in and leaving and staying with everybody else who's doing the same thing. And so the day before the con formally starts, we go out to Valley Fire, open it up as a day trip for one day people. And we had a ton of people last year when it wasn't the big tour. I had an Indonesian guy and a Malaysian guy talking and comparing notes, you know, back and forth from their local clubs back home, which was just awesome to sit and listen to them talk. You talk about internationals. But we had some extra people jump in on the last day too, as usual. Mm-hmm. So we were actually more than 24. We were probably more like 28 or so by the time we went out there, which is another thing. Yeah,
overseas element, because one of those people was from Ireland, I think.
Yes. Ronan, I think was his name.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then so and next year is an off year for the tour, but we'll have that next year. We'll have the 1 day tour out to Valley of Fire the day before the concert.
Larry, question, does where Kirk died, is there a stone with a plaque there somewhere that commemorates that or what?
I mean, if nothing else, you would think Nevada tourism has to be done. Yeah, well, we've talked about that.
Well, they're all in Iowa. They've got the birthplace of Captain Kirk. Why don't they have the death place of Captain? Oh wait,
because well, if you're
Oh, wait, it wasn't really on Earth in the movie. Oh, that's right. Yeah. Oh, well.
Well, you can have it be out of canon, a plaque. Yeah. No, well, Riverside, Iowa is a little farm town. They, you know, it's like the biggest tourist thing they've got. Nevada doesn't quite need that, but
really?
Yeah.
What's Nevada got?
it's very hot in the Valley of Fire. It is not
– You mean it's not
– pretty darn resilient.
It lives up to
its name. We're out there in August too, you know.
But
it's not cold in the Valley of Fire. They just didn't call it that for no reason.
No. And
it's
it wasn't just red rock.
It's really pretty. It's you know, it's gorgeous landscaping, and there's natural history there. There were early day Native Americans there, and there's a lot. You know, there's petroglyphs from ancient. I mean, you know, Aboriginal people that are there. So I mean, what the whole thing on the tour, even Vegas and everywhere else, for different reasons, most of the sites we've gone to, they double up as just, oh, you can tell your mundane friends, you know, oh, yeah, we went to the Santa Monica Pier, you know, which is kind of cool. Mm-hmm. And that's the same thing. There's a natural history museum there that the visitor center that we go in, partly to get out of the heat for 30, 45 minutes. But we go early in the morning. I mean, I don't want to scare anybody. When we do this, it is early August, and we got on the bus at 7, I think, 7 a.m. to get out there at 8 to be outdoors, you know, before it got to be high noon. By the time it's high noon, we're having lunch and about to head back. So,
and how many bottles of water to stay hydrated? I mean, it really – it's a beautiful place, but, you know, be prepared.
Well, and again, don't scare people. We don't head off for like 5 mile hikes for 2 hours or something. It's everything we do is like on and off the bus, pretty easy.
Only one 16-ounce bottle of water is allowed. So, just
a water rack.
Just FYI.
Yeah, we were worried about being the Donner Party or something. You know, if we didn't get
the Donner Party on State Highway with gas. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Episode of Survivor Man or something like that. Who survives?
Well, none of us were Olympic worthy individuals. So if we could handle it, you know, anyone could. And it's well planned in terms of the time of day you go. And we actually ended up having lunch out there, didn't we, Larry?
Yeah, that's the last thing we do is we go to a covered picnic shelter and have lunch on the way. That's our last.
Yeah,
it's a box lunch that comes with it. So,
and that was very tolerable in terms of being in the shade, and I don't remember that being uncomfortable at all. But well worth it to see. And that's
it's almost like someone planned this, Bonnie.
Terrace really put a lot into this. I can tell you. And he, no, that Larry, I'll give you your due, but, Terrace actually,
But then she wrote the other thing on Yelp though. She wrote the other thing.
Yeah. And Terrace has asked me to do an endorsement, and I need to go on and do it, because it certainly is deserving of an endorsement. And Terrace is a very nice guy, and his wife and daughter were actually along on the tour too. And they don't usually go on a lot of the tours. So that said something about their, you know, particular interests and how invested they were in it. But that's kind of on the back end of the tour. I mean, on the front end, I mean, the very first night we went to the Griffith Observatory in L.A. and then had dinner with Gene Roddenberry Jr. at Lucy's El Adobe Cafe. I mean, is that a good day or what?
Yeah,
I would like to have that day.
Yeah. And then, you know, and it just kept going. I mean, the next day we would be like at Union Station where they did some filming. And then, like Larry said, the Santa Monica Pier. And again, these are wonderful things to see. And the Star Trek connection is just kind of the icing on the cake, you know, when you're going around to these places. We went to the Japanese Garden and the T Tillman Water Plant, I think, was in Van Nuys. We stopped there because the building there is what's used as Starfleet headquarters in the movies.
Oh, is it like a, isn't it like a sewage treatment plant, or is that a different location?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
It's the world's most beautiful sewage treatment plant.
Mm-hmm. It looks like space stuff.
Yeah, Well, you really had a respect for the matte artists because, you know, they put, take that building and then put it, you know, in San Francisco, and you're in Van Nuys, and
took away all the poo.
Yeah, the old it's only a model and stuff. Yeah, you know.
It's only a model.
But even the guys that were on the tour who bought their uniforms with them, I mean, this was a great opportunity. They all ran back to the bus or the restrooms or whatever, changed clothes, and came out and actually posed in their uniforms in front of Starfleet Academy. I mean, how cool is that?
Yeah, that's one of the things we remind everybody, like, bring your cosplay stuff. And your. It's the same thing when we go out to Vasquez. You haven't mentioned Vasquez Rocks and Bobby, but we do the same thing out there. Mm. Bobby Clark, who was in the Gorn outfit, he talks about you can go to Vasquez Rocks. It's a county park. But we like to say you can go with the group of fans, and you go, and Bobby Clark comes out and tells you how they filmed Arena, you know, Kirk and the Gorn, and what it was like to film. It wasn't hot. It was November, but it was still pretty
sweaty.
What
it was like to move so slowly.
Well, he did tell us that it was voted one of the worst fights ever, or on some kind of poll, you know, where he took
the
slow
speed. Was he proud of that?
But Bobby was, he was wonderful. And his wife was there. We got to talk some. And, you know, this is where almost, you know, stabbed Kirk. And this is where he found, you know, this is what he ran up. And he actually ran up there. And, you know, just, and you were filming some of this, Larry. Are you planning on doing something with this later?
Well, I've just for posterity, I've taped him all 3 years talking about filming, just so we have it. But, you know, they shot other shows out there, too. They shot Friday's Child. Last tour, we had some guys who were really into the Friday's Child, where the Klingon, the carpet guys, the Capella Ford guys with the Klingon were walking up the rock, and Kirk and Spock lay down their communicator and vibrate it and vibrate a rock slide. And we got over to that and recreated the close-ups and, you know, the actual rock where they put their – it's all very easily findable. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we recreated some of the shots. Some of the guys really got into it. Part of it is if people have a really keen thing they're into, we'll kind of – as much as we can, we'll bend that way within, you know, the greater – depending on what it is, we'll you know, try to go for people if they've really got a hyper interest. Because we look at – people are – laying out the money and the time, and it's really a memorable thing for people. It may even be a once in a lifetime. We've had a couple people come back when we've changed some things up gradually, but for a lot of people, it's a once in a lifetime, you know, chance. And so there, we want to help them make as much of it as they can. It's just a hoot. It's like this year really struck me. It's like we had the new stuff. We had, you know, San Francisco was all new. We did a couple of new stops in L.A. But still, even the things that we've done every year, like Santa Monica, and especially with going out to Valley of Fire and with Bobby at Vasquez, it's like being in a play where every night the audience is different. You know, the house is different. And it's really interesting watching how the dynamic is different each year with a different tour group. Mm-hmm. And even two or three of the – I think we've had four people who were on the very first one who came back this year because there were enough differences. They wanted to see it or do San Francisco. And we would talk about how – I mean, this year's group was a lot bolder. I had to urge people the first time we went to Valley of Fire that it was okay to walk past this little there was a warning sign that just said, warning, this is not marked with, you know, guide ropes. Just stay away from the edge. And I had one year I had to like kind of push people. I didn't push them, but I was like, guys, you can really walk out there. And this year, before I got off the bus, all 24 people were like standing over there.
Jumping over the ropes and like.
Yes.
Yeah, they're all going, I don't see the pile of rocks. I don't see the pile of.
Yeah. It was the Herding Cats air group, I think.
It's always like that.
Star Trek cats.
But. Bobby Clark, he was wonderful. And, you know, sad to say, these – and I'm so glad you are filming that, Larry, and have done other things like that, because as we know all too well, these people are not going to be with us for you know, a whole lot longer. And this is, you know, you're recording history, just entertainment here, you know.
That kind of, you know, that's what my truck land and Portal 47 and everything that I've done, I've kind of wound up being there. I mean, the new is unwinding all the time, and that's exciting. But I, you know, I try to record as much history with people as I can, with the actors and designers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like the tapes I have that I'm getting on my on speaker CDs and remastering that. But I, you know, one of my other soapboxes has been to tell everybody, like what our group back home in Oklahoma City has done, which is preserve a lot of it. Like every corner that's ever had a fan group somewhere, a convention or especially a club, it's like record your stuff or digitize your stuff, protect it, preserve it. You know, fandom, especially Trek fandom, has been around since the early 70s. Mm-hmm. And don't lose that, because we have so many new fans coming in who have, I mean, they can't help but know. Mm-hmm. They're just barely learning, you know, why Chekhov has funky hair the first few episodes when he first comes on the show. I mean, mm-hmm. they're, you know, what happened to Sulu the second season? I mean, they're just learning some of those basic things and some of these layers and layers of coolness and texture and insight and, I, you know, what I call dot connecting. You know, we need to preserve all that. And thanks to the internet, a lot of it can be – it's still intensive to scan all that paper. But I, what's one of my soapboxes is to tell people to preserve their local history, because it's all part of the, you know, the national tapestry of why Star Trek survived and why it came back. And we should never forget – and the pioneers. And something we do in the Con of Wrath is I just wanted to start laughing 6-8 years ago when all this whole thing about, oh, geek girls, it's just new phenomenon. It's like, no, women built, as Miss Moss well knows, it's like women, the zine editors who were in love with Spock or just were fascinated by Spock, they were the ones who built early fandom, because the zines led to the clubs and the conventions and the whole comeback.
And wasn't the fan letter writing campaign to keep Star Trek on the air, wasn't that led by a woman as well?
Well, Bijo, right. Bijo and John, and they, you know, there's been an effort to make sure that John got as much credit, but they worked in LA and worked on the show answering fan mail. So they were there and made a lot of sense to see all that hands on. But even beyond, yeah, and I was glad to see Bijo getting so much, Bijo and John Trimble getting so much credit this year to a lot of the 50th anniversary events and Hoopla and some of the documentaries that were done. That was awesome. But there are tons more, I mean, Jacqueline Lichtenberg and Joni Winston, who, I mean, and a lot of them passed away. Some of them are still with us. But the first people that organized the first New York convention, the committee convention.
The Well Committee, yeah.
And then the Well Committee, which was like before the internet, that's how people communicated and found out stuff. Before we had message boards and, you know, anything online or digital, everything was paper and you got it for the cost of a stamped self-addressed envelope. And those people, Shirley Mayuski and Helen Young and Jacqueline Lichtenberg, who was also a prolific writer, and I'm leaving out tons of people here, but like I said, Joni Winston,
mm-hmm.
a lot of women did the first big conventions, and the zine editors that that wrote the first early zines. And that's where Star Trek fandom grew out of that movement, bit by bit, you know, quickly. By the mid-70s, and then everything was off and running by, you know, all the revivals that were happening and then finally happened with the motion picture. Well, the animated series first and then the motion picture. But anyway, that's one of the things I like to laugh about in The Con of Wrath, gently, but prove the point that there is just – and you look – more and more old video and old, you know, movie film, home movies are coming out of convention footage. And there's just as many, you know, women and young girls at the cons running around in their mirror uniform cut-off midriff – uniforms or what have their Vulcan gowns or whatever.
I was not wearing one of those, Larry.
Oh, come on, Bonnie. You can tell us the truth.
But I do think that, you know, there's a...
Did you ever do a costume, Bonnie?
I'm wearing a costume right now, but thankfully you can't see it. There is a debt to be – thank you, Larry, for that, you know, I am woman, hear me roar, acknowledgement. And it's quite true. And, you know, Larry, that might be a subject for someone else or yourself to take for another documentary.
Well, somebody needs to record the first generation of fandom, the zines and the first con. I was thinking about that. That would be something else. Because we have to pass this along to the new kids on the block.
And I agree. And you know, some is owed, crazily enough, to, you know, us adolescent at that time, writing what we would call now softcore porn regarding the Star Trek characters. This was before Slash, you know.
Oh, I started to say, did you do Slash, Bon? No,
went into Slash, but in the beginning, it was just
Rule 34.
Amateur writing about, you know, being a crew member and falling in love with and fill in the blank. And this is fun, and this is what happened. But like Larry said, this was all you wrote it, you typed it, you mimeographed it, and you mailed it to the next person or photographs. You know, I have a very, as both y'all know, I guess, a very large collection on Leonard Nimoy, per se. And that back then, I would write the studios and I would write the newspapers and say, can I have this photo? Do you have a photo of this? Do you have a photo? They'd mail it to free. You know, get it off my desk, you know.
That's cool.
And other photos and things I have that were collected, envelopes would go around. I don't know if you know about this, Larry, but all of us females had – there was this massive, like, chain letter thing going on where you would put a bunch of photographs in an envelope and mail it to someone and say, pick out whatever you want, put in a dollar, and then mail the rest to the next person. And so – people collected even through the mail by sending these envelopes packed full of articles and photographs.
And dollar bills, apparently.
And dollar bills. And it was like you took what you wanted, you put your dollar or two in, and you mailed it to the next, you know, the next female that was interested in this. And people got some really neat stuff that way. Oh, I have an extra thing from, you know, studio on this. Let me put it in the envelope, see if someone else wants it. I mean, you know, it was share and share alike, and I think people have a hard time, as Larry and I will say many times, recognizing what it was like before social media. Nothing came easy.
Before the internet, period, before email, before
arduous process.
Yes,
well, actually, Bonnie,
you mailed that envelope in the snow, walking 5 miles one way.
That's right.
Up and down the hills and through the forests to grandmother's house we go.
Exactly. Yeah.
But actually, Bonnie, a minute ago you said something about, you know, Larry needs like a documentary project to do after Con of Wrath. And it reminded me because the last time I did a podcast with just our other co-host, Guy Davis, who couldn't be here tonight, we talked about the shuttlecraft Galileo. And we were wondering, Larry, were you involved in that, like, at all?
Not with this restoration, no. No, I mean, guys got together and the ones that they could put the money into it, and, you know, good on them and save it from this perpetual almost get done. You know, all these years of people with good intentions, it takes a lot of follow through. It takes the money and it takes the follow through and it takes the having the wherewithal of facilities and all that to you know, it's cool to think you've got the Galileo, but then you stick it in your backyard or your front yard and then it gets rained on and you're going to get working on it and you got to clear out your garage and, you know, and it's just ordinary Janes and Joes, you know, didn't, you know, over for what, 20 years or whatever it's been, 30 years, maybe even.
Yeah.
That was out like, and, but every once in a while there'd be, you know, even in pre-internet days like Interstat or Starlog, somebody would buy it and somebody would either whoever bought it. Or maybe even somebody – I mean there was at least one time when people took pictures of it going down a, you know, interstate on a flatbed truck or something. People would take pictures and they'd turn up somewhere just randomly in a magazine or in a fanzine somewhere, fan, you know, letter zine, and say, oh, look, so-and-so's – we just saw the Galileo going south on, you know, whatever, I-80 or something. And I know it was in Cleveland for a while and different owners had it over the years and – I think some of that's been pieced together now since they finally got it to people who could had the money and the wherewithal and the vision to get it done. And, you know, they took it to some boat restorers, which was a good decision.
Yeah.
And you know, it had the original frame and very few – all the panels were too rotted to use. But there are the best panel or two. One is with – oh, my God, I've gone blank on his name. But he's here in Mojave in California that did all the custom cars. Oh, I hate myself. I can't think of his name.
Yeah, we actually Guy did a great history on it because I didn't know any of this. He went into depth and he had lots of notes on this history. And I just remarked, I'm like, this would be a great documentary. I wonder if Larry had anything to do with it. And maybe we could, like, hey, Larry, are you going to do the Shuttlecraft Galileo history after you do Con of Wrath? Because it just seemed really interesting all the hands it went through.
I could see. I would hope that I think it was Adam Schneider that oversaw the final restoration. But I know that they put some time in the documentary, the final redo that ended up before it was perched at Houston, at the museum in Houston. And now temporarily it's at the Intrepid in New York City for the 50th. And then it'll go back to Houston. But it would be fun to talk to the people over the years, although I don't know how in-depth. You know, yeah, we bought it. We were always going to go out there and fix it up, and we couldn't get out there to it. I mean, you know, I don't know, but I think maybe a 30-minute online documentary or something could handle all that, short of the final restoration process, which would be awesome and could probably take at least another 30 minutes. But, yeah, it's all worth observing, yeah.
Sure, it just sounded so interesting. I'm like, man, this would be a great, like, video documentary. Maybe Larry can do this after he's done with Con of Wrath. And I was definitely curious if you were involved with it at all, because it just seemed like it's something that you might be involved with just because of, you know, your presence in Star Trek, and at least in some way. So the Geek Nation tour sounds like it was absolutely fantastic. What was your impression of the Star Trek Las Vegas this year?
I was pleasantly surprised in terms of, I think we were all anticipating humanity at its what was that Star Trek episode where the population was out of, you know, there was so many people on the planet and they had to do something about their overpopulation and, oh, help me, Larry.
And I've just gone blank.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of what people anticipated, that, you know, that it would be so crowded such that you would not be able to get to anything. It would be shades of, you know, mini Comic-Con or something like that. And although it was, you know, a sold-out convention and there were many people there, I thought the crowds and the masses of people were handled much more effectively than I thought would be the case.
Yeah, it was much less insane than I thought it was. It was still full, and there were moments when the entire main, like after Whoopi and after Kirstie Alley, some of the historic moments, mm-hmm. when it would empty out, mm-hmm. it was totally wall-to-wall, you know, bodies in mm-hmm. the halls. But it was not quite as or things with, like, elevators and restrooms weren't quite as insane as I was thinking they might have been.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. And did they ever come out with any attendance? No, I know the main ballroom, they said, there were 6,000 in the main ballroom. That's what someone told me.
I never heard a final figure, but that could be – that's about what I would think.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's about what Hall H holds at San Diego Comic-Con. So,
and those were the people in the ballroom at the same time. I think they were even more beyond that may not have been in the ballroom, you know, that were elsewhere, you know, during some.
Right. Not everyone would be in the ballroom all the time. I mean,
So I would think the number would, you know, in terms of total attendance, would be more than the six, even, I guess is what I'm trying to say. But it was, and of course, you know, the dilemma at every large con like this, the programming is such that there are, you know, several things you want to see that happen to be at the same time. So you're just, you know, you're making choices, but you couldn't go wrong. I mean, there was something, you know, it was a wealth of, you know, embarrassment of riches. You know, there were so many different things to go to.
I almost feel like with any con, though, like there's always lots of cool things. You have to make choices and miss things.
Mm-hmm. And before we go any further, the Mark of Gideon, it just made me really mad
I
had to actually,
that escaped me. I can sleep tonight. Okay.
Okay, good. The Gideonites.
Yes.
I just had I wasn't at Mission New York, but I heard that the one of the biggest knocks against it was that there was so much programming. There were like two and three and four tracks, and you couldn't see everything that you – it was almost like a mini Comic-Con in that there was so much good stuff, but you couldn't humanly see everything. and that people were literally sitting in one thing and reading the live tweets of what was going on in other rooms.
Wow.
While they're all sitting there at the same place.
Wow.
That's bonkers.
Yeah, and in terms of Vegas, too, I mean, again, there was – now, Larry, you may know more stuff behind the scenes, but, you know, there didn't seem to be the crisis du jour, you know, kind of thing going on. You know, this program's running way over. This person didn't show up. This person is at – we're going to have to change the time for this. It just seemed to flow, you know.
Right.
Better. And for me, you know, of course, the highlights were seeing – I'd seen – Kirstie in Texas, what we were talking about, Con of Wrath earlier, but seeing her again, seeing Whoopi Goldberg, seeing seeing Gary Lockwood with Sally Kellerman, you know, those types of and what was really cool, and all of us thought later, wow, when these guests would come out, when the stars would come out, they had their own phones and they were recording, you know, they were. Mm-hmm. Videoing the audience and everything. They were as excited. You picked up on their excitement at our excitement. And so you could tell it was something special for them because they were making, you know, doing a history of it themselves. You know, they would pan the audience with their phones and they would pan the people they were sitting next to. And it was just like they had that showed some awareness that this was special. You know, this was different. You know, and to see them exciting and wanting to record it was really cool.
Yeah. And I don't know if you've had Bonnie on before, but she mentioned this in passing. But Bonnie is an amazing, maybe the biggest collector of Leonard's memorabilia and his photography and just over the years and has been kind of quiet about it until his passing and knew him here the last couple of, you know, decade or two and worked with his archivist. And then the last, since he passed away, has been working with a couple of routes about helping with shows or convention background and letting it herself be known as a resource. But
well, thank you, Larry, because, I mean, you actually, like, tweeted both of us last time we had you on, and that introduced me to Bonnie, and we did have her on very shortly after.
Good, good.
The last time we had you on. So this is our second time having Bonnie, and this is why I wanted to have you both come on, because you're both such a wealth of information, and you both went to Vegas together and did the Skeet Nation tour. So, like, you know, who better to hear about this stuff from you two, like, longtime fans and with so much knowledge.
But on bump. thank you, David.
Checks in the mail, David.
Yeah.
No, I'm glad. I wasn't sure, so I'm glad you had Bonnie on. That's awesome. Because
thank you for introducing us. It was great to get to talk with her that time, and you both at the moment.
Yeah,
it's been a real you know, the past several years with the losses that, you know, have come with the Star Trek cast and then the exciting developments with Star Trek as an entity and it's been exciting. You know, my first convention was 1977, I think. And, you know, to see how things have grown. And then, Larry, you're an archivist yourself, obviously. I mean, I think we both, and we're not alone in this, certainly, We definitely have a respect for the history and what has come before, as well as what's to come, you know. And it's once again, at least this year, who knows what, you know, with the new show and everything, it's been rejuvenating in some ways.
Well, I'm this way about history in general. The old line about those who forget the past are doomed to repeat it, or to that effect. And I just think it's, you know, to a lesser extent, it's not, you know, life and death, obviously, with Star Trek. But just like the last year or two, I mean, the last 12 years, I talk about the fallow times of not having an active show in production and even having a movie. People get excited about a film, no matter what the content is, but it's still just a film. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, then people have debated about the Kelvin timeline, but the whole alternate universe concept of going that way was so controversial. But the thing I've tried to talk about this last year is we've had a ton of new fans that we keep acknowledging because of the movies, but, like, what does that really mean as they, and a lot of them have gone to the mainstream, but what does that really mean as the years go by? What do they bring to the mainstream I don't think people are so much not welcoming to the movies and the fandom they brought, but I think a lot of old fandom is just oblivious and blindsided. And it's like, what is that bringing into the mix of what will be the new normal in 20 years when all of the JJ fans, much less the fans that come in from Discovery, mm-hmm. Back of my mind, I'm thinking that they'll feel more legit, but then again, they're going to be watching All Access and have 13 a year, and it'll be a different experience. Mm-hmm. But I just sometimes the longer you've been in fandom, the more, not taking for granted, but the more you remember to think about the differences as well as the similarities, because we all eventually get into similarities of fans. But then, you know, and I don't mean just the, you know, the fan wars. The fan wars.
Is there a truck plane?
Sorry, yeah, like there's apparently someone like using the loudest truck ever, like running around my house.
I thought Scotty was getting things ramped, or Nomad was getting things ramped.
I was getting out of the way.
9.6! 9.7!
Oh, the poor Scottish.
500 miles to Planet Killer in closing.
The poor Scottish guys that were on the tour, we made them say every line that Scotty ever said. accent.
Did they try to do an American accent just to make you mad so that you wouldn't ask them to do it anymore?
I would tell Steve and Bill, I said, come on, tell us you can, I get the power. And they would do it, and it would be just so right on, you know. These were real Scotsmen, you know. So, and then, of course, they would ask me to say y'all, and is there some tea around? And when I took out my umbrella in the, when we were out in the desert, they made fun of me and my parasol. So anyway, it was an opportunity experience. But
yeah, I'm sorry. I was wandering there with my thoughts. But there's just been things. I just try to keep myself open to not being in a rut, because it's easy enough to do anyway. And this last year, I noticed two trends, and I really wanted to talk about these at Vegas, and I didn't wind up not having the platform to do it widely. Oh, my God. But one of them was the JJ fans and what their experiences have been, and even for the ones that have hung on and gotten assimilated into mainstream, but you know, it's their first taste of Trek was the JJ movies and what their viewpoint on things is like. And the other was, I kept seeing tons of people who were 70s and 80s fans, and then, you know, dropped either life and raising kids and whatever took them away from fandom, or they lost interest for whatever the content. And between Leonard passing and the 50th, they've come back. Because I just saw so many people saying, this is my first convention in 20 years. This is my first convention in 30 years. Mm. And I wanted to talk to some of them let them talk, let them speak. And just because they would have interesting, you know, time capsule kind of viewpoints on things. So anyway, as we move forward, if there is a fourth movie, and hopefully Discovery will take this 4-month rest and make good use of it and not be rushed. And we won't have the old joke about you have to wait on every Star Trek series you have to wait till the third season to get good.
I hope not, now that they're going with a strong arc series.
Hopefully
it'll be captivating from the beginning. If it takes three seasons to get good, if you have a strong arc, I don't know how that's going to work.
I know we have the ADD culture anymore. I don't think that would totally work, even if it was pre-budgeted. But that's my point. I was just trying to say that we need to keep ourselves open to just because, oh, this is the way it was for me 20 years ago when I was, you know, old guard fan. Because we have to watch. The other thing is we have to watch. We've had a ton of new fans coming in because of the movies. But still, when I get a Star Trek room at a Comic-Con, much less at, say, Vegas, I do my little hands-up poll of, you know, what brought you into fandom and what's your favorite incarnation. And, it's original series and next-gen, which you expect. And Deep Space Nine is way more popular now than it was when it was on the air. It's more accessible, for one thing. And the feminist voices are speaking up, and I don't mean that in a boxy, stereotypical way, but there's a lot more people speaking up for Voyager now than did 5-10 years ago. And there's a whole, you know, as Doug said, the fans of Enterprise, it has so many new fans, they don't even know they're supposed to hate the show. they're so new. But, you know, every incarnation has its people, but I just...
We need to be accepting of each other and not trying to ostracize people like so many, like, original fans do with the Kelvin timeline people. It just doesn't make any sense.
what I'm saying, by definition, a lot of younger fans are younger fans who either they're not used to organized fandom on the convention level, or they may not have income yet. Their parents can't, you know, it may be until they're 25 or 30 that they've got income discretionable and the decision making and the wherewithal to say, hey, I'm going to go to this either down the street from me or the big one in Vegas or whatever. So just because they're not representing, they're out there buying movie tickets and they're out there buying, you know, they're buying stuff and they're watching the shows, which is the main thing, whether it's Netflix or it's, you know, Blu-rays or whatever. And they're not turning up maybe in some of these Comic-Con audiences or some of the Trek-Con audiences, but they're out there. So anyway, I just things I like to throw into people. Just know we don't get so smug in our ruts, you know, of awareness or lack of awareness.
Exactly. I was actually at the Buffalo Comic Con today, and I didn't see one Star Trek cosplay. The closest I saw was someone wearing a T-shirt that looked like a yellow Kirk type shirt, and I saw someone with a Star Trek pen, and that was it.
Did they have any Trek guests?
No, like our Buffalo Comic Con is like really tiny.
But I mean,
most of the guests are like either artists or like people from like horror movies, like Nightmare on Elm Street, like. Don't have very many big guests here, unfortunately.
Yeah, but I'm still small or large. I'm just saying that if there'd been Trek guests, then people would have come out to see them, and then there might have been a little more.
Yeah, I would love to get Trek guests here in Buffalo. I'd love not have to go like 6 hours to go see a Trek guest,
like Albany or what?
Sure, but I mean, I Albany's closest as they've ever been, so I might have to make that trek.
It could be worse, David. You could live in North Carolina, where anyone is going to travel some distance to get to a major convention, certainly. I mean, the Southeast is really – of course, there's Dragon Con in Atlanta, but Atlanta's still some distance away from the mid-Atlantic states, you know, and so.
Well, we all know that Dragon Con is more about the parties and the costume than it is the game.
Yeah, well, it's more. Yes, it's kind of a living, breathing thing in and of itself, which I think is also changing. But that's another whole topic. But yes, yeah. It's a mashup. I mean, it's the ultimate mashup, Dragon Con, I think. But, you know, when you live in areas where, you know, there isn't a, you know, of course, when I first started going to conventions, they were in little, smaller towns like Greensboro and North Carolina. And I first saw, you know, Leonard Nimoy on lecture tours at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro and at in Atlantic Christian College, which he thought was a hilarious name for a school, and it's no longer Atlantic Christian College. They saved the name. They changed the name. But anyway, you started with, you really do have to plan, and sometimes you do feel kind of out of the mainstream because you're not living in California or in a more urban, populated area that will bring conventions. I asked the folks at Creation, I said, how come you've never had a Creation Con in North Carolina or Virginia or South Carolina?
Or New York.
Yeah.
I think the New York one was done by a different company, the company that does PAX, which I don't remember the name off the top of my head.
Reed Pop,
yes.
Yeah, they do celebrations, and they do New York Comic Con. Well, Creation will say that they try to do the New York market in New Jersey, like they've done where they just had it.
Parsippany or
Cedar Hill, Cedar Vale.
Yeah. But my point was it's sometimes, you know, hard to take advantage of some of the wonderful things that are out there by virtue of your location. But I think that's where things like Portal 47 can come in, and where social media is an asset to bring people that would normally have to, you know, wait weeks to hear about something or to know that something's out there to kind of hook up. I mean, with other fans and to be in venues that heretofore were you know, were not known or not available. So I guess I'm just saying the rural-urban thing is hopefully that gap's closing and there'll be more opportunities to meet with like-minded people. I don't know.
Yeah, and you know what? That's something I hadn't even thought about as a bonus or a feature of Portal 47. It, when because I really am kind of part of the I don't want to say struggle, but part of the hurdle with it is because it dawned on me this is really kind of like a new paradigm what I'm trying to do here, even both to talk about it, to communicate it, and then to get it across to people, which I mean both on my end and on the receiver's end. Mm-hmm. And but something that came to me, and I've had a couple of people who are, you know, they live out in the boonies. If they ever get to anything, it's close by and it's still a small market. But it dawned on me the power of the internet is that, like I said, I started saying it's like a mini con all year long, no matter where you live. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even think about that at first. But the people who are more isolated,
mm-hmm.
or they're just in an area where they can't get it, there's no big cons, you know, that's a bonus. It's like a welcome. It's like radio and electricity coming to people in the 30s and the 20s, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, you're doing your fireside chats, Larry, with the fans out there, much like FDR. So it's yeah, very very that it, you know, I, depending on what day you're talking to me, I either adore social media or I despise it, and you know, this is bridging gaps between different populations and different opportunities and whatnot. That's certainly one of the perks of social media. I mean, just being able to go on YouTube now and hear someone speak from a convention that in the past you'd have to wait for someone's letter to tell you about it. You know, now you can, you know, see it, you know.
Yeah.
You can almost be there without being there.
Correct.
Excellent. So it sounds like both the Geek Nation tour and Star Trek Las Vegas was a lot of fun. Vegas was 5 days this year. Did the fifth day really add anything extra, or was it just kind of there?
I remember. I feel like I never felt any lag time. I mean, I think the 5 days were filled pretty effectively. I don't know. I think they're going to go for 5 days again next year. Mm-hmm. I don't know how that will work. I mean, the 50th was just kind of a unique in and of itself, and it's going to be interesting to see. And I don't have not made any plans at this point whether or not to go next year. But it's going to be interesting to see how will it be different, how different, and in what way from the big 50th. It has to be, but you know, where do we go from here? Kind of type thing with Vegas in particular, like when you've hit the what many people thought was a pinnacle, you know, where do you go? And I'm hoping that the new series will be kind of that that element that can still allow for something new and exciting and bringing in new people into the mix as guests, et cetera, et cetera.
I've been watching the build for the last couple of years get crazier and crazier and crazier for everything with the 50th, the cruise, the Vegas convention, the other conventions, just every Comic-Con having their Trek programming, hopefully, then adding Mission New York, and like our tour was twice as big as it normally is. And I kept wondering how much of a hangover or how much of the, you know, the foam off the top would happen for the next year. And having Discovery coming along is going to help a lot with I mean, I'm still wondering to see if Discovery, and knowing how Brian's, you know, temperament and everything are, if it will, by being new and fresh and on a streaming service and probably a little, you know, just made more modern, where somebody who's 15 or 20 isn't watching a 10-year-old show and getting excited about it and just thinking that it's – or just having the ownership of this is my generation, even way more than you could even do with a movie, because a movie is still 2 hours every 3 or 4 years. It there's not enough there to really pile up and hit a critical mass with people, really. It may be good enough for Star Wars, but that's what Star Wars was created as. But I'm really excited to see if Discovery – is not just a hit, but it's a hit with the younger kids, the young demographic, so that it really penetrates the Comic-Con crowd, you know, the young, bubbly, trendsetty Comic-Con crowd, and then that takes off, you know, the way Next Generation did after Best of Both Worlds,
It would be nice I think that would be a really nice thing if it would happen that way. But being on CBS All Access, it's like, are they going to ask their parents? Are they going to care enough to ask their parents to subscribe to this other thing to make it big? I mean, I could see longtime Trek fans subscribing to it because they know it's coming and they're excited for it. But
right,
are the newer fans even going
to
be aware?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how CBS promotes it and then what the word of mouth is, you know, like what's at school the next day and forget the water cooler conversation. How about at school the next day? And would they bug their parents into getting it? I hadn't thought of that exact angle, but that's totally in play.
Because it's not like they can just turn it on television, like, oh, it's there. Like,
right.
I mean, CBS is totally banking on Star Trek to sell CBS All Access. I mean, basically. I mean,
right. It's the flagship, the way Voyager is UPN, yeah.
Yeah, I almost kind of thought that they would be pulling Star Trek from Netflix just so they could start selling All Access earlier, because if Star Trek's off of Netflix, I mean, I would have to pretty much subscribe to All Access now if it wasn't on Netflix. So yeah. I'm almost sort of surprised they haven't done that. I mean, I'm glad they haven't, because I'd rather just pay for Netflix until, you know, CBS All Access comes out. But it's interesting. See how it'll work out.
Well, interesting times ahead, that's for sure. I do think next year is a big question mark. And I do hope people give the show a chance. I mean, there's already some
negative social media stuff. Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, which is so counter to, you know, what it's all about to begin with. I mean, come on, let's have some idic here, you know? There are other ways of...
Time to scream idic at people. Yep. Yeah.
Please, yeah. Idic.
Yes.
I just chalked it up to your loud 10%, you know, that's always around whenever there's a new chapter. So, I mean, new incarnation.
I wasn't upset when I heard Discovery was getting pushed to May, considering we haven't really gotten any news other than a couple things Brian Fuller said. But, I mean, no casting announcements or anything. So I was more disappointed because I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of expecting this at this point, but I wasn't upset.
You know, I know this may shock some of your listeners, but there was a time when TV shows were like made, they were sold and made a pilot and then sold for real and then they were made and no one knew anything about them until they got their fall TV issue of TV Guide and then
absolutely.
You watched it debut.
Absolutely. I mean,
the fact that everything has to be in a microscope. Of course, it's Star Trek and that would have always, you know, Next Generation wasn't
always
the same way.
The
you know, all the Treks, no matter what was going on with communication culture, you know, were under the microscope more than the norm. But it's just unprecedented now. And my take on that format, it's like, thank God. I mean, my take is, thank God that the guys running All Access, because this show started as a business decision, right? Before there was any content or showrunner or anything. It was, they're gonna do this company. What's the smartest way to launch this new company? Oh, get a Star Trek. Get the new Star Trek. Okay, bang. I mean, it's business, but then at the same time, fandom, you know, for the fan audience, A, Brian didn't take the job unless he could do it his way. And know that he could make the very best show he could possibly make because he doesn't want to go down as the guy who, you know, did the crappiest Star Trek ever. And he doesn't want to be the guy who saddling the fan with the creativity with the business side. There's so much pressure on the show. They're doing four original shows. One of them is a spinoff from The Good Wife with Christine Baranski. I can't remember the other two. But there's so much business pressure also on this to not fail. So it can be fair to Midland business-wise, you know, with numbers. I mean, they're not having to go out and do ratings like the old, you know, the Nielsens like they used to have to do. That's one of the beauties of this. But they still are expecting it to help launch and sell the network, so the service. So there's a lot of pressure on them too. And this could have been, I mean, not just Brian, but thank goodness for whatever the suits are in charge. They could have said, nope, you guys, we promised, you know, like a December 7th for motion picture. We promised this date and we're going to have a hard launch and we cannot afford to not be on date with this, on time with this. And they could have said, sorry guys, nope, get the damn thing done. And which would have affected the quality, I'm sure. I don't think they wanted a delay. And I'm sure All Access wasn't thrilled about not having this big oomph to help them drive sales in January like they were expecting. Now the oomph in sales push will be in May. I mean, they'll take money anytime they can get it. But, you know,
sure,
seeing,
yeah.
or having that CBS broadcast premiere and then having people turn around and subscribe that day, that night, you know, that's going to be May now, not January. So I'm sure that's a whole quarter and a half left. You know, the business guy, the bean counters, would have loved to have had it sooner.
I mean, they've got to have so much writing on that first episode. I wonder if they're going to even do a 2-hour on it or if they're going to, like, well, do a 1-hour.
It's a 2-hour. I don't know if they'll show them together or not, but it's a two. They've said it's a 2-hour. It's a 2-part pilot. Now, whether it's a 2-hour movie or whether they're showing them 1 hour and 1 hour, I don't know yet. But they've said the first 3 hours are written. So it's not about the writing being behind. Might be a little behind, but it sounds like it's more the casting. And they've said for months the casting announcements would be in October. So it's that and the physicality, and I think it just turned into that. Maybe the post-production was just going to be too much to out and, you know, build it, deliver even the first one in January and then do like normal TV broadcast would be, where you don't season before you release. Sometimes a 10 or 13, you might get them all filmed before you start airing them. But I was already expecting, you know, number 13 would not be done by the time number one airs.
Yeah.
So anyway, which is another reason why they weren't going to drop, although I think having a one big full season drop was stupid. I wouldn't want that as a fan, much less it's not the business thing to do, because people want to talk about and micro-analyze everything week to week.
Like we will do and, here on this show.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know why you wouldn't want that business-wise to lose all that buzz. And fan-wise, why, you know, it'd be like ODing on sugar or something. I mean, it's like you can't, you know, getting 42 presents at Christmas. You couldn't, 47
Seven.
Presents
47.
At Christmas. Yeah, caught myself.
But Larry, anyway. who would have had the...
What I was going to say was I'm glad that the suits in charge of all access gave them the 4 months and didn't hold their feet to the fire, because everybody knows there's a lot riding on this, not just making it starts with making every little fanboy and fangirl's heart happy. It starts with that, because then that leads to money, and that leads to buzz, which leads to more money and subscriptions and all that. So,
well, you kind of answered my question. You know, who would have had the clout to put the brakes on this? Where do you think that came from?
I don't know, tip of my tongue, but whoever is their supervising people in programming at All Access as they start up this little, you know, whether it's CBS people on loan or All Access is just using the CBS program and development people, or they have their own and their baby, or they came over in a new position or whatever. But it's whoever those people are. You know, the supervisor, you know, the credit on shows would say, you know, like it was on the original series, it was a Herb Solo.
Okay. Yeah.
The supervising, you know, in charge of production, studio supervisor in charge of production, whatever.
Right.
Like Rick Berman started to be for the syndicated Next Gen before they brought him on board himself. So
I agree that I think it's a wise decision. And yeah, people that are the bean counters, the money folks do deserve some credit for not forcing the issue. And I mean, when you were just talking, it harkened back to when the first motion picture was released, you know, and Star Trek, the motion picture, you know, that was one of those that has to be released at this time, at this date, at this. And of course, it was poorly edited. And we know all the problems the first picture had. And part of that was due to the rush job.
Yeah.
Right. Definitely. Right. That's kind of the most infamous time. But I mean, like a lot of the original series episodes where they barely got them on in time because their optics were pioneering and pushing everything to the limit, you know. Pushing the envelope of what they could do on a TV time schedule.
Right.
Every effects house in Hollywood was, you know, and the things they would do on movies didn't work because they couldn't wait on that kind of turnaround time. They had to have stuff faster than that. So,
Yeah. Aaron, did you have any other questions?
No.
Wake Aaron up.
Every question I've ever
Aaron, wake up.
No, I just been sitting back and listening, because normally me and Dave are in the same room and we can kind of like, you know, bounce off each other. But since logistically this episode, we can't be in the same room, it's just better if I just listen to you know, these stories, and it's you know, I'm just enjoying it. It's like a podcast that's happening live for me
right now. I wonder why that is.
it's like it's happening now.
As we speak.
Yeah, now. Right now.
When will Vin become now? Soon.
Well, there certainly has been a wide, you know, breadth and depth of topics here between the convention and the 50th and the Geek Nation tour and Portal 47 and the new show. And only that, Larry, I need you to put in the kitchen sink. I mean, I think everything else is.
Well, here's one more thing at the risk of making this go any longer, if anybody's still awake. But and I think she was a college student. And I don't ever disparage anybody because everybody has where they are or they're told to do something. But sometimes I just want to throw up my hands at the internet blogging culture, of which I'm part of it. But that's only because that's what there is now. But there was an article on IO9 last week about how CBS and Paramount royally screwed up the 50th anniversary. And I'm just like, are you kidding me? Are we walking on the same planet? I'm just amazed.
I saw that.
2 years ago, licensing folks didn't even know about a new series. We were all bemoaning the fact that all there would be was a new movie, and they were digging in to come up with as many events to fill in the gap of not having a new series or even the announcement of a new – like the 20th anniversary was the first time anybody celebrated, you know, commercially celebrated an anniversary of Trek because – the Whale's Voyage Home had come out and been a huge international hit, and it had been 20 years of or 15 years of reruns. 18 years actually, say 17. And the local stations were screaming for more than 80 hours of Star Trek, and you know, we finally got this huge movie, and they finally announced that they would do a new series, and here's what the formula will be. Here's how they'll manage it. You know. And they were trying – they were in the same boat here. It's like you can't – as a marketer, as a business person, you don't let the 50th anniversary of your brand, of your thing that is so wildly popular. You should be shot if you let that go by without utilizing it to the max. It's again, one of those times when the fandom side of things and the business side are in alignment. It's like the fans want it and the business people want it because they want to make money. Mm. And they want new fans. I mean, it's like it's a great synergy circle. Everybody's in the same side of the boat. And the people in licensing and the business side of CBS, who are in charge of handling that for the whole franchise, movies too, even though that's kind of awkward at times, they were digging in. You know, we had the biggest splash ever. They took the movie premiere at San Diego Comic-Con, the biggest Comic-Con in the world, and had the biggest footprint for Star Trek ever. It was amazing. This people may make fun of it a little bit, but this Mac makeup licensing deal is a great way to get Star Trek into mainstream places where it's never been with girls and young women. I mean, it's just such a representing factor here. Some people are like, why'd they take up so much space at the Vegas booth? Well, that's because it was a huge deal, and it may have seemed odd at first until you step back and realize it. But there, the concerts that they had the tour show for, the Intrepid and the shuttle tie-in, and the Star Trek Academy experience, and so many of these shows and events, and then the conventions, the new deal with Reed Pop, and I mean, there's so much stuff they really, and then they dug in with some really cool books, and the publishing line. And a lot of just goofy – now it's my turn to have background noise. Some – you know, just all kinds of things.
I got a loud biker and you got crime. Sounds great. Yeah.
It could be dead people.
Or dead people, I guess.
Totally innocent dead people. But or badly wounded.
Flesh wound.
It could be – they could have fallen downstairs. It could be something as harmless as that. No, but you know what I'm saying? There was so much Star Trek, and then media, and there were a lot of, you know, like the Smithsonian special, the Enterprise model being timed to reopen it and air in space and get back to its, but not just the remodeling job that it deserved for the last 20 years, but then a place of honor just as you walk in the museum as a source of inspiration for the real planes and the real spacecraft. Mm-hmm. There were so many angles going on here that it was the biggest Star Trek year ever, and then this. I said, say girl, which I don't mean to disparage, But this person writes an article about how the 50th anniversary was screwed up. And all I could tell was because there was no, like, CBS-produced TV special. I mean, I couldn't get what the big deal was.
I
was like,
she was complaining about Paramount stuff, too.
There were all kinds of things. Well, the Paramount did a movie, and the promotion was late on the movie, but then they got started late on the movie. The movie was way better than I was expecting.
The movie
it caught up.
Was great. I just – the marketing for it was horrible. Like, the first real trailer didn't come out until, like 28 right. days before the movie showed.
And I think a lot of that was due to – I think – I don't know if those people got replaced or what, but I think a lot of that was just because – remember, they were behind the ball on getting the damn thing. Speaking of December 7th. They had a fix. I was worrying about having flashbacks to motion picture with that because they had a fixed date that they'd already slid back a couple of weeks, I think, or maybe that was part of the process. They got started late because of the reshuffle. They threw out the Orsi team's script and direction and went and redid it. And they wrote that script on the fly, basically. So it was a way better movie than it had any right being as fast as the turnaround was. So they didn't have anything for the promoters and the marketers to promote and market until later.
Well, but they put out a teaser in December that aired in front of Star Wars, supposedly. Right. I saw Star Wars, but I didn't see the trailer in the movie theaters.
Turned off three-fourths of the world. And then the teasers after that, when they finally showed them, were great and very Star Trek at heart. So
yeah, they were, but it was like a 7-month gap between trailers, which I've never seen for anything before.
Right. No,
usually there's like a 3 or 4 month gap between trailers, but this was like a better part of a year. I'm like, is the movie still coming out, guys? Guys?
But that's like the parents are divorced and the kid was with, you know, the dad on graduation night, and the dad got the kid there like 2 minutes before he had to be there for his graduation, and then people are yelling at the mom too. I mean, you know, or whatever. I'm not trying to be genderist here. Swap your genders, whatever. I'm just trying to make a point about but even then – and I think it probably did reflect – because I think it's a much better movie than Into Darkness, but it didn't do as well nationally or internationally as Into Darkness, which is kind of amazing.
But I think it's a lot to do with the marketing. With Into Darkness, there was a smartphone app, and there was like all these incentives to keep checking the app, and like they let me go see the movie 2 days early because of the app. I mean, it was a lot of really good marketing for Into Darkness, and there was nothing, almost nothing for Beyond.
And I think it's more about the marketing and timing and quantity versus the movie itself.
Yeah, the movie was fantastic. It should have done way better than it did, I think, because, I mean, I feel like
– better than Stid, that's all I'll say.
I feel like it was the best Star Trek movie since Six. Personally, as far as it feeling like Star Trek, you know? That's but that's my personal feeling.
We have another show here, David.
Yeah, I said I didn't mean to start down this rabbit hole, but that's another topic that's been out there. And this is the first time I was going to write a blog post on it and had time to. Maybe I'll do that on this week. I'm going to be at libraries in Michigan this next coming week. I don't know what your turnaround time is, but in 5 libraries around Greater Detroit from Monday through Saturday, and then the Northeast Trek Convention in Albany over Veterans Day in December, and then I have 2 more that aren't formally announced yet, but there's one later in November and one in late October where I'm going to be West Coast and the Midwest. I'll just say that, and hopefully be out soon. But anyway.
Nice. I hope to come say hi to you, hopefully, in the November Northeast Albany.
That would be awesome.
That's what I'm hoping.
I started to go down there. I guess I'm just talking about being busy, but hopefully I'll get a chance to talk about this. But I don't want to denigrate the writer, or I'd rather blame it on some boss that said, hey, we've been way too nice to Star Trek lately. Go write some hate piece or something. Or maybe she was at Mission New York. Maybe she fell down the stairs and I don't know, somewhere, or somebody, you know, mugged her or something. I don't know.
Who's wearing a Star Trek uniform?
She just really was.
It was a topic that got a lot of, Jeffersonian. I mean, you take the opposite just to, because you can.
Right. Everybody, this was a topic at our Portal 47 Ask Dr. Trek roundtable. I brought that up and everybody said, yeah, that seemed kind of crazy. Like, this was the biggest Trek year in ages. Mm-hmm. How can she say that?
Well,
maybe she just thought it should have been bigger.
Well, and my barometer is hearing from people who are not Trek fans. I mean, I think this was more one of the biggest main Star Trek in mainstream years. You know, and one of my barometers is my 87-year-old mother, who kind of gets it and doesn't get it, although she's heard me talk about this since I was 12, 13 years old. I mean, and she was saying, they had a thing on Star Trek on the news the other night. I watched that. Okay, that makes – I think I might understand what – you know. I mean, we're – I'm
better late than never, Mom.
I'm 50 years in. Yeah, right, you know. And but because it was mainstream and for her and people like her, that it gave it some legitimacy, some validation. That's the other thing the 50th did. I mean, there wasn't a news show that didn't touch on it in some way. Time had a magazine out on it. Newsweek had a magazine out on it. You know, I mean, mainstream stuff on the newsstands, mainstream stuff on, you know, the documentaries. And so when, you know, when my 87-year-old mother starts going, I didn't know, fill in the blank, about Star Trek. She's not going to sit down and watch an episode, but she was getting it through the lens of this 50th, you know, and that was fascinating to me.
So those clickbait stories about 10 things you didn't know about Star Trek actually work with your mother.
Yeah. Yes, they will.
LeVar Burton was Geordi LaForge. I hope you didn't know that.
Exactly. I will print those out and give them to her and say, read and learn, you know. And that's true. And a lot of those articles came out with the 50th, you know, what things came to be because of Star Trek, from everything from the iPad to the, you know, cell phone. We've been down that path before. But all that kind of got reiterated for the 50th. Mm-hmm. And went a little more. I mean, it was in Raid magazine. It was in, you know, and so people were going, okay, this isn't just about my wacky daughter. You know, there are some people out there who also do this stuff, you know, and enough people are interested to read about it in this venue, you know, in this publication. So, I mean, that was kind of cool for me. I mean, as I say, it took the 50th to kind of, for my mom to go ding, you know, because it was in her world. Star Trek had come.
Yeah.
Had crossed out of the niche and into the mainstream. That's kind of nice.
Yes.
Got beyond the barrier at the edge of her understanding.
Yes.
Yeah.
At the edge of the nebula. Don't let the little drone ships get you. Run!
But that's significant. I mean, that is significant. That's one thing the 50th did was reach people that have not been Star Trek and may never be Star Trek fans, but they took a moment to go, maybe there's something to this after all.
Yes, yeah. Indeed. Very well said.
And sometimes when we're deep, deep, deep in the fandom trenches, sometimes some of those big picture decisions like that, like the mainstream sourcing, like the Mac makeup tie-in licensing, sometimes those things get lost on us when we're in the trenches, but they really are about the health of the franchise overall. And anyway, it's worth stopping and remembering before we go back into our fanboy trenches, fangirl trenches.
I can say for experience that most people don't seem to understand my fandom.
Even today, even in the Big Bang generation, where it's the number one show.
Me and Aaron are isolated in our fandom in Buffalo.
Yeah. No, it's not that. I think the outside people, they may understand it in some level, but they don't really like get into it.
I would be more used to from the young demographic where people are all into Marvel DC and Star Wars, and they're like, oh, and the idea that Star Trek is like this old creaky franchise that some people, you know. I mean, that's one thing that JJ movies have brought some freshness and new breath to it, I guess. I used to just worry about what the media would say. Well, now the media is all right. I mean, when Leonard passed and people would say, I wonder if the mainstream media will ignore this. It's like, no, they're all running the media. The geeks won. It's not that. It's kind of like, what about the younger, you know, the younger generation? And that's why I was so high on the JJ movies at first, but also provided the CBS All Access hump can be gotten over, where the Comic-Con you know, the entry-level Comic-Con generation will be with Discovery. I really would love to see it take off and be that flame, because otherwise I'm, you know, we're so used to thinking about our elders, like your mom still, Bonnie. It's the other end. It's like getting bit on the other end too. It's like the 15 to 25 year olds going, okay, so what's Star Trek now? Why is this that show? Oh, that's that show from the 90s, you know?
Yes. Oh, Dagger.
We're to that point. Forget the, you know, the old show, the old show. But even the 90s is like ancient history to people, to the younger fans. So anyway, those are all just things in play. I don't know what your audience demographic is here that's listening to your podcast, guys. But
we don't even know that.
Okay, better to be blind than blinded by the dark than blinded by the light. Wrapped up like a douche in a room. No. anyway, all food for thought. We're just sitting here rambling and pontificating, but it's all food for thought. And like I said, the 50th is over. It's settling down, and I'm really curious to see what the 51st, you know, is like next year. What the new year will be like, and we'll see what happens with the show and with the new series and everything. Four months later, and whatever. Much glad that it's 4 months later and not 4 months too soon.
Yeah, I definitely agree. As long as they take their time with it and make it amazing, I'm all for it.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And one wonders what next year would have been like, would be like, if this show wasn't on the cusp. I mean, where would we have gone from here? Could we have gone from here? One says yes, because we've made it 50 years. But then again, after you've leapt off that, you know, pinnacle again. Maybe I hope I'm not putting too much pressure on the show to keep things to keep momentum going. Although that's certainly what we all want to see. But the scary thing is, what if the show wasn't on the horizon? What direction would we be going in?
That would be scary if the show wasn't on the horizon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a year ago, that's what we thought we had. So, you know, a new movie and all these events.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think anybody's going to roll over and kill themselves, but, you know, shoot themselves in the foot. But it's nice. It's nice to have. Like I said, I would have just felt for the franchise hurt if, like I said, if a 50th anniversary had come and gone and there was nothing newer than the third version of a movie series.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, there will be one more. So what's so special about it aside from timing?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So.
Yes, indeed. Well, Bonnie and Larry, thank you so much for coming on and talking with us about this fun experience that y'all both got to do. And then everything else we got to talk about tonight, which was also fantastic.
We kind of went around the world in 80 days, didn't we?
We went around the moons of Nibia by Antares Flame and whatever it is.
Yeah. All the countries.
All the countries.
Except Malta.
Well, I hope you're a hell of an editor, David. I mean, or you'll have the longest.
No, actually, last week's episode was just about 2 hours. We're not quite 2 hours yet, so they'll be in for another long one.
You guys, I was taking pauses. I would get off on a rant, but then I would give you plenty of time to shut things down. So can't blame me.
Oh no, I remember the first time I asked you if you would come on, and you're like, "Are you sure you want me?" I'm like, "Yes." I'm all about Larry Nemechek and your stories and the depth of knowledge you have. It's always fantastic, and I hope people will come on and message you about doing the transcribing for you so we can get Con of Wrath up and running. So how can they find you guys on social media, and how can they help you with Con of Wrath?
Okay, Larry, hit it.
Okay, well, no, go to the Con of Wrath Facebook page is good. There's also conofwrath.com if you want to make us, you know, even a $20 help with PayPal. Or just come to my main site, which is LarryNemechek.com. Or my email's out there, Larry@LarryNemechek.com. And if you enjoy deep diving like some of this, it's not always just about who directed what and who was the second assistant janitor stand-in on what show. I mean, you know, we talk about current events and what's coming down the pike in Portal 47 too. So if you're interested in that, email me or just go to the portal47.net page which is the first of my pages to look like it was made in the 21st century. The rest will follow soon. So, and if nothing else, get me on Twitter, just at Larry Nemechek, or go to the Larry Nemechek's Trekland regular Facebook page. So many, many ways there.
And I am on Twitter and Facebook, but I also have a full-time job that is non-Trek, so those are the pesky things just getting in the way. So I don't always – I get many requests, which is – I'm very flattered, but I don't what do you call it? I don't necessarily friend back or follow back. And that's only a matter of – that's only a factor of time. That's just time. If I ever get to retire and get to do – you know, more, you know, just a factor of time. But I am on Twitter at NCBonnie1. And just one or two housekeeping things very quickly. Heather and Jeff Hay, I was told to give them a shout out, or at least to tell y'all hi from them in Shoreleaf. And
hello, Shoreleaf.
Yay, Shoreleaf.
Yay.
Okay. And along with all the other things we've been talking about, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention, you know, For the Love of Spock that is out now. That's worthy of a show.
Oh, absolutely.
David and Aaron and all the responses to that and how that documentary came about. And the reviews have been across the board fabulous for it, for which I'm very relieved. and I did work. Contribute some things to the film and worked with Adam a little bit. We talked on the phone and emailed some, and he's an interesting guy. the documentary is fabulous, and I suggest that everyone go on it's on video on demand through several outlets, I think. And has also been shown in theaters and has been at several film festivals, actually. And I would highly recommend that. And also Julie and Nimoy and her husband, David Knight, are going to be targeting November now for their documentary on COPD that Leonard had kind of hinted or encouraged or inspired them to do, so others could take it as a cautionary tale in terms of what happened with his health. And they are very dedicated to getting his message out regarding COPD, which is the, you know, I think the third highest cause of death, you know, in the United States now. And so Julie has said that November they're looking at that, and I do not know what kind of venue or premiere arrangement they will be having on that. But I've seen some of the advanced screening clips on it where they do interview Leonard's doctor, his children and grandchildren. It's kind of going to be like For the Love of Spock in that it's going to – and you know, it too is kind of a love letter to a family member, but it's also a cautionary tale that Leonard and the family felt was very important. So I just want to throw out that those two things are out and in the works.
Excellent.
Excellent.
Yep. And I should have mentioned one more thing, if I could, enterpriseinspace.org, which is the group that I'm speaking for, is picking up more and more steam. Janet Ivy of Janet's Planet just did a wonderful video testimonial that's going viral, and hopefully there'll be some foundational aid announcements coming very soon. But this is the project that's going to be globally taking 100 or more winning student projects from kindergarten through postgrad across all the STEAM spectrum, science, technology, engineering, arts, and math, to fly in an orbiter that's been designed by a winning design named Enterprise and sponsored by National Space Society. So it's the NSS Enterprise. And the crowdfunding side of the funding is that people can send $20 or more and have their name on a chip or even more. You could you donate enough, you can be on the send your picture aboard and have a picture taken. But either way, be aboard the actual first Enterprise in space, since the shuttle, you know, was a test shuttle and didn't actually fly. It wasn't powered. So that's trying to get going by 2019 or maybe 2020. And just it's gathering steam every day. It's been kind of a slow rolling launch. But I talk about it when I can at conventions and have the information. And I just hope everybody goes and plops in their $20 and becomes a virtual crew member on the NSS Enterprise and helps out this amazing program, which will now we've decided will go beyond this first launch. And that's enterpriseinspace.org. It's tax deductible in the U.S. even, so you can even take it off. It's a 501c3.
Hear, hear.
Fantastic. Definitely check all that stuff out.
Yeah, if you're inspired by the – it started by a fan that was inspired by Enterprise and Gene Roddenberry and all the optimistic science fiction, you know, moving into the future. How do we best do that? Well, we affect our youth. And that's how we'll get into space and moving into the future rationally and quicker than we could otherwise. So it's building that excitement for moving into space and getting on with it after a few lagging years here, and helping, you know, helping kids out who otherwise, along with the other contests for getting your stuff into space, you pay your own way. And this actually pays their cargo space and their travel to be able to come load up their winning experiments and in retrieving them. So that winning a contest to launch your project is not, you know, congratulations, you won, now pay for the whole thing. That's part of the deal too. But it's just an awesome, awesome program. I just urge everybody to go over to enterpriseinspace.org and check it out and be a virtual crew member.
Fantastic. Yeah, definitely. Check all the stuff out. Check out Con of Wrath and all the other wonderful things that have been mentioned tonight. And we'll be putting these links in the show notes as well. So again, Bonnie and Larry, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you for listening. All our music was provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or follow them on Twitter at warp11. You can find us online at synthaholics.com. You can email us at synthaholics@yahoo.com. Our Twitter is at synthaholicduo. If you want to follow us individually, you can follow me at David_J_Duncan and Aaron at Blackbird2004. If you liked our podcast, please subscribe to us on iTunes. We can also be found on Stitcher. Please tell your friends about the show. Also, if you could leave us a review and a rating, that would help us out so much. It'll help us learn how to improve so we can reach more of our fellow Trek fans. We'd love to hear your feedback.
And thank you all out there for listening. Live long and prosper, guys.
Thanks.
Trek well.
You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
That was fun, guys.
Hey.
Hey, I want you to know I have, like, had the OU Ohio State game over here on a little thing, and it is not going well. And I'm trying to not blame myself for upsetting the karma of not having my 100% attention glued to the TV. But
I'm sorry that we've taken you away from that.
Well, they had an hour and a half rain delay. I thought it would at least be into the halftime when we started, but it's been wacky.
Who are they playing?
It's Ohio State. It's a big national game.
It's not Atlantic Coast Conference. I told them you were on a beer run before the Oklahoma.
Oh yeah.
No, we know exactly what's going
on. Larry's going for a beer run.
Yeah, yeah. And is the game still being postponed a little bit, Larry?
Oh, they started.
Oh, there uh-huh. You go. That's why Larry's attention is to that.
Attention has been right here the whole time. Where were you, Miss Moss?
Skype was being stupid, actually. I will.